Just want to start with a quick Chassidus Shemaisa, Chassidus story regarding the mitzvah of removing chametz from our possession. The great Levi Yitzchak Berditchev was known for having conversations with Hashem and advocating on behalf of the Jewish people. The story goes that it was the Seder night, and before he began the Seder, he knocked on someone's door, a person who dealt in contraband, you know, illegal merchandise. At that point of time, there was maybe a war going on between Russia and Turkey, and you were not permitted to have Turkish wool. If you were caught with Turkish wool, you could be executed. So Levi Yitzchak knocked on the door of a person who dealt in contraband, and he said to the man, "Can you get me Turkish wool?" He said, "No, sure, no problem." How many meters? Whatever you want. Okay, thank you. Then after finishing that conversation, he went to a different house of a Jew, and he knocked on the Jew's door, and he said, "You know, I know someone who's very ill, and he needs a piece of bread. Do you have a piece of bread?" And the man said, "Rebbe, piece of bread? It's Pesach." So Rebbe Yitzchak turned to Rebbeinu Shalom, and he said, "Rebbeinu Shalom, the Tsar and his armies can't stop people from getting contraband, even under the threat of execution. But you have no armies and no guns. All you have is a mitzvah telling the Jewish people not to have chametz, and they don't have it. Mi kamcha Yisrael, how great is your nation?" You know, not getting removing chametz from our possession on Pesach is a great merit. So we have discussed in the past, but it's always worthwhile reviewing, you know, these laws about our obligation of disposing of chametz. And it's important to know that the Torah gives us a positive commandment to remove chametz from our possession, and it gives us two prohibitions. The mitzvah, the positive commandment, is tashbisu. You shall remove, or you shall not have. And that prohibition, that obligation, actually, the Torah says it, ach bayom harishon tashbisu. But on the first day, you shall remove. And the Gemara tells us that although it says the first day, which would sound like on Pesach itself, the word ach only tells us it's not going on the first day, it's going on part before the first day, which means that already from midday of Erev Pesach, we shall already have removed any chametz from our possession. And that positive commandment to remove already starts from before that. It can start already 30 days before. To remove that already, the mitzvah is fulfilled 30 days before removing the chametz, because that's how we're making sure it's removed. By midday of Erev Pesach, we have an obligation to make sure there is no more chametz in our possession. That process begins already before. Once Pesach begins, if a person still owns chametz, then they already have transgressions, prohibitions that they're transgressing. They're referred to as Baal Yirah, Baal Yematz. The Torah says chametz may not appear, may not be seen, or be found in your domain, in your possession. So we have a positive commandment to make sure it's gone, and if we haven't done that, we have two prohibitions that we have chas v'shalom transgressed. And just to speak out something very basic, when the Torah says Baal Yiroah, that it may not be seen, it does not mean that there's a prohibition of looking at chametz on Pesach. There is no prohibition of looking at chametz on Pesach. It's just another way of the Torah expressing that chametz should not be within your possession. And the Torah gives us two prohibitions. Okay. Now, and so we have the Torah's obligation of having chametz already gone from midday of Erev Pesach. And we also have a rabbinic prohibition. Chazal, our sages, said that an hour before midday of Erev Pesach, already we can't possess chametz. That's what we told when we talk about the fifth hour. Already in the fifth hour of the day, we're not allowed to possess chametz, which is already a rabbinic law. The sages said the Torah prohibits midday of Erev Pesach, but we're going to be precautionary. We're going to take it even more careful, and already an hour before that, you may not possess. An hour before that, you may not eat, even though you still could possess. But an hour before midday of Erev Pesach, the Rabbanan said, at that point of time, that's when we see you have to burn your chametz by that time. That's the point of time where you're not allowed to possess chametz anymore. Okay? When the Torah tells us, Tashbis, the Torah tells us we have to remove chametz, we have to make sure there's no chametz. What is the Torah commanding us to do? So essentially, the Torah is not commanding us to clean for Pesach. From the Torah's point, you would not have to clean for Pesach. You have two possible things you can do. The Torah wants to make wants us to make sure that we do not own the chametz. If you can make sure you don't own the chametz, then from the Torah's part, you have done enough. So one option, if not to own your chametz, is to sell it to a guy, right? Just sell all your chametz to a guy. It's not your chametz anymore. You have now removed the chametz from your possession. Another option is something that we anyway do, and that's called bittul chametz, when we nullify the chametz. After checking for chametz on the night of Erev Pesach, and after burning the chametz, we say kol chamira, in which we declare any chametz that's still in our possession, we declare it like the dust, right, like dirt. It means nothing to us, it has no value to us, we don't own it. And if you can make a sincere declaration that none of this is yours anymore, then it's not yours. And once it's not yours anymore, from the Torah's point, you've done your part. So which means that from the Torah's part, from the Torah's obligation, if it's not yours, it can be sitting there on your counter, it can be staring you in the face, but if it's not yours anymore, you've made it not yours anymore, you have fulfilled your obligation. The Chachamim said, that's not going to work. To go out and actually have chametz sitting there in front of you, chametz that you're always eating, you're always dealing with year-round, and have it sitting there in front of you, that's not going to work. And therefore, they are the ones who actually obligated us to remove the chametz. Even if somehow or another the chametz is not ours, you have to remove it. You got to get it out of there. Which is why, whatever chametz that we do sell, right, we can't just leave it out. You have to put it away. You've got to seal it up. You have to actually make sure it's blocked away from you. You put it in a cabinet and you seal it up, or you put it in a room and you seal up the room, because even though it's not your chametz, you're not allowed to have, you may not have that chametz accessible to you. So therefore, at the end of the day, our obligation to go ahead and to make sure that we don't have any chametz actually in our possession is a rabbinic obligation. It could very well be that if a guy decides, can I leave my chametz by you? Yeah, but you better, lock it up. You have to lock it up in a room or something. You can't just leave it around like that. I'm simplifying that. But basically the point is that even if the chametz is not belonging to you, you can't just leave it there. You've got to put it aside. You've got to put it away. You got to remove it. You got to remove it somehow. Now, so that leads us to the question of, so when we look for chametz and try to remove chametz, what kind of chametz are we looking for? How much? How much is it? What kind of chametz are we looking for exactly? Big chametz, little chametz. Now, all children are taught, right, that you have to clean up the crumbs. So my brother-in-law told me that when his niece was very young and she saw matzah crumbs on the table, she started screaming chametz because it's crumbs. Because everybody is so used to the idea of looking and searching for crumbs. So what is it exactly when we are looking for chametz and we're cleaning and trying to remove, and, we don't, it's a separate discussion that we don't rely on just, selling everything, even crumbs, whatever it may be. The fact that at the end of the day, we are going to be working on removing chametz. What is the chametz that we're trying to remove from our possession? So clearly, if we're talking about a chametz that is the size of a kazayas or the volume of a kazayas, which is the volume around half an egg, that clearly is something that the Torah obligates us that we must remove that. And the Chachamim said, you must remove that. You can't have that around. That you must remove. If it's less than the size of a kazayas, then already the basic idea of how we measure what we're still obligated to remove, and I use the word obligated, what we're obligated to remove is going to be an amount of chametz that would be significant enough to possibly eat. So let's say you have this little cookie, right? And it's not a kazayas. It's less than a kazayas, right? But a little cookie is something that a person will eat. So even though it's not the size of a kazayas, it's less than a kazayas, but if it's something that is, it's a size of something that's edible. A Cheerio is very small, but little Cheerios are eaten. So something that is going to be the size of something that you could eat, that you would normally eat, that's something that we say, you have to remove that. You have to dispose of that. Now, what if it's a crumb? Okay, the holy crumb. You know, what's the deal with the crumbs? So the deal is like this. The Jewish people have been getting rid of the crumbs from their house on Pesach for thousands of years. And the Gemara Shulchan Aruch says, Yisrael Kadoshim, the Jewish people are holy. And they don't want even a mashu, even a small amount of chametz in their possession. We're not talking about eating now, we're talking about in possession now. They don't want even that a minuscule amount, they don't want. Which is why we work very hard to rid any amount of chametz. At the same time, though, according to, I will say, many Paiskim, the majority of Paiskim, you are not obligated to remove crumbs. Crumbs on the floor, okay, crumbs on your table, that could be a separate discussion. Crumbs on the floor, which is on the floor, it's dirty, typically people are not eating crumbs off the floor, are not significant enough to say, I must remove this, lest I come to eat it. It's not significant enough to say, I'm possessing chametz. It's not significant enough to go ahead and worry about the fact I'm going to come to eat it. And therefore, according to the Ikar HaDin, according to the letter of the law, you are not obligated to have to go and remove such small amounts of chametz. Okay? Now, at the same time, Yisrael Kadoshim, the Jewish people are holy. It's been a well-established custom to rid every amount of chametz that you can. And therefore, you can't say, you know, so there's some crumbs all over the floor, you know, big deal, you know, it's only crumbs. No. You can clean it up, you clean it up, right? That is what Klal Yisrael has been doing for years. The question is, though, if you understand that the crumbs are not an obligation, so then the way I see it is, so then you can be more at peace, right, with the way that you clean, depending on your situation, depending on your schedule, depending on what your availability is. You know, people work a whole day, and they have children, and then they have to clean for Pesach. If you understand what it is that you're obligated to do, number one, you can prioritize. Number two, you won't be as neurotic about what you're cleaning because you know that this is not what I'm obligated to do. That doesn't mean you're not going to do a thorough job. I had a friend when I was in the Kollel. So I will admit, you know, even though I didn't stay home for Pesach, I made my wife crazy about cleaning for Pesach. And I had a friend, he also used to clean for Pesach, right? But if I think a lot of times we would leave from Boston Pesach the day of Bedikas Chametz, right? So the night before, which is not really the night of Bedikas Chametz, we did a Bedika because you're supposed to do a Bedika, you're supposed to search. So I had a friend who told me that night he cleaned for Pesach. I was like, what? That night, that's when you take care of your whole apartment? I was like, what are you talking about? How can you do such a thing? But he was right. He was right for a lot of reasons. Especially you're not going to be home, right? But at the end of the day, when you're talking about cleaning for Pesach, right? If you do a thorough cleaning, right? Forget about, now again, you know, there's another thing that if you're not going to be home for Pesach, then yeah, you could sell. You're not going to be there. If you're not going to be there, there's no concern that I'm going to come to eat anything. So you can go in and sell and go. You don't have to clean for Pesach then. You know, you want to go ahead and do a mitzvah, that's your decision. But you're not obligated to do that, and many people do that. You're not home, you don't clean. You go not home, you sell all your chametz, and you don't have to clean because I'm not going to be there. I remember when I was in Yeshiva Philadelphia, the night before we left for Pesach, you should have said we got in the dormitory, right? Place was on wheels, right? I knew a guy who said, take apart his bed to clean for Pesach. Took apart his bed. Sat there scrubbing the whole thing. You know, he must have seen something in his mother's house like that. Okay? But, you know, you don't have to do that. Even if you're staying home, you don't have to do that. If somebody wants to do that, that's, you know, we don't make fun of people's menhagim on Pesach. We don't do that. Okay? We don't make fun of that. But you have to know, you know, what you're obligated to do, what you're not obligated to do. What is something that should be done when it's something that is customary to be done. If it's customary to be done, you know, again, everybody has their customs and how it should be done, and when it could be done, it should be done. But clearly, you need to know your priorities because, depending on what you're able to do, for whatever your personal decision is, what you're going to do, okay, you need to do it. You should be doing it based on understanding what I have to, what I don't have to do. If in my experience, if you believe you're obligated to get rid of all those crumbs, you're going to be spending an awful lot of time on anything you think may possibly be a crumb. Because if I'm obligated, right, I got to make sure to take care of it. And I'm not trying to knock people who do that. But at the same time, you need to know what exactly it is that is an obligation, to figure out for yourself what's the way to go for you. So therefore, again, you know, I would never advocate that a person, you know, it's only crumbs, don't bother with it. You can clean it up, you clean it up. Right? You do a thorough cleaning, okay? But understanding what my obligations are, what are not my obligations, helps you figure out how much you're going to be able to do. I always say this every year. There used to be somebody who lived here, and they made a Pesach. They came to us for the Seder, but they cleaned the house for Pesach. In the middle of the Seder, the guy picked himself up, lied down on the couch, and did not move until the whole Seder was over. Forget about it. I don't even think he ate matzah that night. He was so sick and so worn out from his cleaning for Pesach that he literally collapsed in the middle of the Seder. He picked himself up, lied down on the couch, gone. For the whole Seder. That's not what this minig was about. Again, and I don't want to knock people who work hard. I say this over many times also. Rabbi Yochanan Lubavitch, my wife's great grandfather, okay? His wife, right, was, again, the way I understand from what my father-in-law says, she did not show up until she did not show up at the Seder until the end, until Rabbi Gamliel. I'm assuming she was there for Kiddush, I'm not sure exactly. Okay, but the story goes, Rabbi Yochanan used to say, go wake up your mother. She had no strength. She was done. So she was asleep by the Seder. When it comes to Rabbi Gamliel, which is the main part of Magid, they said, go wake her up. Okay, listen, people have different customs, what they're going to do. But Rabbi Scheinberg Zatzal and many, 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 many Rabbanim came to a point where they were looking at the situation, women's situation, and was coming to a point that, you know, they felt that women were not enjoying Pesach, not having a chance to do the mitzvahs properly, and therefore they started advocating that we need to approach our Pesach cleaning in a different way. I think some people were so happy with that because, you know, the minhag of Klal Yisrael was always to be so strict and so stringent. But again, you know, many Rabbanim nowadays advocate this. You need to know what it is that you're obligated to do, what you're not obligated to do, so you can make the right decision for yourself, what you're going to do to be able to fulfill your mitzvah and have a decent, enjoyable Pesach. Okay, so therefore, Yisrael Kadeshim, we clean thoroughly. We clean whatever we possibly can clean. And again, when we're there, that's when you've got that obligation. But you're cleaning thoroughly because you want to get everything, but you need to know what you're obligated and what you're not obligated in. Talking about, we start with a Chassidus Shemaisa, we'll interject with another one, about cleaning for Pesach. So they tell Rabbi Twersky tells a story like this. The story about a Yid who was very, very meticulous on cleaning for Pesach. Already, you know, you think the butchery is bad, that there's no chametz there, you know, starting from Purim. This person already, who knows how much weeks before Pesach, you know, he didn't let chametz into his house weeks before Pesach. He wanted to be so careful. And he practiced all the stringencies, and he cleaned, and he did everything that he possibly could do. And when the Seder came down, he sat there with his family, feeling so satisfied that he fulfilled the mitzvah properly. Okay, and he continued all the stringencies that he could throughout Pesach. One day he goes to the well to draw water, and he looks in the well, and he sees a loaf of bread floating in the well. And he's mortified. He's mortified, right? And this was the water he was using, right? The water that had the chametz floating in it, that's the water that he used. He was heartbroken. So he went to a tzaddik, and he asked the tzaddik, you know, how could this happen to me? I tried so hard not to have chametz in my possession. How come the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't protect me? So the tzaddik said to him, the thing is like this. To fulfill Pesach, it's hard. It's not an easy thing to do. The only way you can really complete it properly, get things done properly, is if you have siyata d'shmaya. You need Hashem's help. That's the way you're going to be able to really fulfill all the laws of Pesach properly. Okay, so you went ahead and you worked very hard to put, and you put all your effort into cleaning for Pesach, which is what a person has to do. All you can do is put in your best effort. But after you put in your best effort, you have to realize that you're only going to be able to complete it with Hashem's help. So you put in all your effort, but you forgot to daven to Hashem to help you complete it. You forgot to daven to him to ask him for help, that he should help you get the job completely done. And because you basically only relied on your efforts, so you, the Rebbeinu Shlomo didn't protect you. You know, a person has to do what they can. They put in the best effort that they can. They do their best. Yeah, and the rest of it is in the hands of the Rebbeinu Shlomo. You know, there are certain things that we can only do the best that we can, and the rest we put our trust in Hashem that he'll help us complete the job. Okay, so now, where do we look for chametz? Basically, we look for chametz. Where do we try to clean out? Any place that chametz can have be brought to. Any place where we consider that chametz has a good chance of landing up there, that is where we have to clean out. If you have a place, you have an area of your house that you feel very confident, chametz doesn't go there. Just doesn't go there, right? My kids don't go there. My kids are too scared to go there. My kids didn't go up to the attic by themselves. They didn't. They didn't go up to the attic. So we never had a, and now, well, who goes up to the attic with food? I don't go up to the attic with food, right? I go up to the computer room maybe with food. I don't go up to the attic. So, you know, the attic, the attic is not something that you have to go and, I'll go by Badika, I'll look around, but, you know, that's not something you have to start, you know, moving everything around in the attic and cleaning up, you know? If there's a place where you are convinced that you feel confident that chametz doesn't go there, you don't have to go there, you don't have to clean there, right? Zula children told me on Shabbos, they know the food doesn't go past certain places. It doesn't go, and they were very strong about it, you know? You know, if that's the way it is, then you're in pretty good shape. If at the same time, Kenahara, you have a house of little kids, right? And you have a small apartment, and you can't go ahead necessarily and tell children, no, you can't go here with this, go with that. You can't have full control over it, okay? Then you gotta check further, right? You know, you have to know where little kids are gonna go ahead and take the chametz. Little kids, you know, sometimes you can control it, sometimes you can't. If there's a room that you are concerned that there's a possibility of chametz going there, then that's where you have to look. But at the same time, again, if there's a place where you're confident that chametz is not there, that's not a place that you have to start. You know, I wouldn't say don't clean there at all, but again, it really depends what it is. You know, it depends where the place is. But if there's a place where you are confident the chametz is not there, that's not a place that you're obligated to look and try to clean chametz out of. If you have an area that it's difficult to get to, there's a place in your house, it's difficult, there are certain areas it's difficult to get to, even if you know chametz is there. So for instance, can't think of a good example. To me, the example is like this. You know, in your freezer, okay, there is the vent where the air comes out from, right? It's got little holes. And you know, you look in, right, and you see some crumbs all the way under there, okay? Now, those crumbs ain't coming out, right? They're not coming out. You're not going to get them. You can stick your finger in and you're not going to reach them, okay? Something basically, if there is a place where chametz may be, okay, but it's not, you can't reach it, you can't get to it. That is considered a place. That's considered. Now again, I'm not talking, you know, if it would be a whole cookie there, I don't know what to tell you. But if we're not talking about that, we're clearly talking about something that's smaller than that, right? And maybe even not smaller than that. Again, I mean, you know, if there is chametz in a place where it's not reachable, okay, good. You know, you're going to sell your chametz. You're going to be mavatel your chametz, you know. All that stuff you're going to do, especially on something like that you can't even reach. And you can't reach it. That's not something you have. You don't have to unscrew. You don't have to take apart the whole freezer, the whole thing, to be able to get to it. Right? There is some kind of vent, and there's chametz down there in the vent. There's chametz there, right? But you can't reach it. You can't reach. You're not going to get to it. You don't have to make your. You don't have to go ahead and go through the bother trying to get it out. Then there's a whole discussion. Do I have to move my fridge? Do I have to move my stove? Do I have to move it out to check for chametz under it? Now, the halacha is, unless you're somebody that commonly goes ahead and moves, you know, your fridge or your stove out of place, if you're not a person who does that, you're not mechuyev to do that. If for some reason you are, or, I don't know, you're expecting some repairman to have to come and move it, you know, you're expecting it to become uncovered and to become revealed, that's a very different ballgame. Now, some people will do it anyway, right? Whether it's normal to move the stove or the fridge, right? They're going to do it anyway. Either because, why not? It's a good chance to finally clean out from under there. Or because, again, you saw Kedoshim. You know, at the end of the day, you know, if we can, we try to make sure that there is no chametz in our possession. So if you go ahead and move away the fridge and move away the stove, you know, you fulfill that. Are you mechuyev to do that? You're not mechuyev to do that. Okay? In the good old days, right, I used to watch people taking apart their car seats. I used to pull out the whole car seat, back car seat, to check under if there's no chametz that fell in there. Now, you know, how many people are going to stick their hand all the way down, right, to take the chametz out? You know, I'm not talking about, you know, when it's on the surface over there, like in between where the seat and the back meet, right? There you can find a whole, box of Cheerios altogether, possibly, okay? There you can find, that's possible, right? Where your fingers fit in, that's something to talk about, right? But again, you know, to have to reach all the way down under the seat because there's some kind of an open area there. I don't even know if nowadays cars, that's even possible. But
just take the thing off and throw it in the washing machine. It's not
take
like,
what?
It's a lot easier, the car seats today.
I'm not talking about the seat. I'm talking about the actual back seat.
The actual back seat of the car.
No, not that. The actual back seats. Those things, again, you want to talk about, you know, where you can fit your fingers under to reach? That's one thing. Now you're going to start talking about having to stick your hand all the way in to have to dig out everything that's under there. You know, you're not going to, you don't go there. Basically, where you typically don't go and it's not reachable, that is not a place I have to start trying to clean out my chametz from. Again, you want to go, you saw Kedoshim, you want to go further and practice what Jews have tried to do for thousands of years? Okay, but you still need to know, you know, your priorities, especially when almost so much time and strength that you have. Let's talk about a couple of examples of places that have crumbs, little things, and about how far we go with them. Okay, so when I was a kid, my job was to clean the svarim from chametz. Okay, now most of the svarim that I cleaned, right, never came to the table. Never got near a food, okay? But you have to clean the svarim. And let's not talk about whether the way we cleaned those svarim even worked. You know, if there was chametz there, okay? You take the sefer and you flip through it, you shake it out, right? Supposedly all the chametz comes pouring out from there. You know, I don't know if that's good. I know, who knows if that really works? What?
They'll probably get, if there's like a big chunk of something.
Yeah, but you don't typically have big chunks stuck there. That's not the common thing. What's commonly going to be there is going to be little things, okay? And again, if you're talking about little crumbs, okay, again, it's small, it's insignificant, you know, you're going to start eating those crumbs, it's typically you're not, okay? So, to go ahead and say, am I mechuyev to go ahead and go through all my svarim books that maybe I ate chametz over, you know, unless you really think that you've been, you know, eating, you know, cookies and cake over your stuff and that like big pieces are falling in there, you know, but if that's not your concern, if your concern is crumbs, right? So now again, am I obligated? I'm not obligated, right? But maybe I should, right? Yisrael Kedoshim, maybe I should. Well, you know, there's a lot of work having to go through each page and going through each page to see, are there crumbs there? Okay, so is a person obligated? No, a person not obligated. If a person doesn't want to go through that very extraneous effort, okay, they don't want to go through it. You can't say they're obligated to go through it, but they better remember something very important. If you're not checking, don't put it on the table, because if there is a crumb on the table and you eat it, then you have eaten chametz. Again, chametz v'mashu aser. Any amount of chametz is forbidden to eat. So if you're going to go in and say, I don't have to check, don't check. But don't put it on your table. Because if there is a crumb there and the crumb falls on the table and you end up eating it, you ate chametz. I'm not saying you're having another isa, but you ate chametz. So when you're going to decide, this is a very important rule, and we're very strict on this, right? Any kid who brings a toy onto the table in a house, right? they, you know, okay, I didn't say that. You said that's true. You know, get it off the table. It's not on the table. Not on the table. Because, again, toys, okay? In the old days, right, we used to take the Legos and soak it in the bathtub and go through all the toys and, okay, did I get everything that could possibly be stuck in the Lego? Did I get it out? Didn't I get it out? I mean, you're not obligated to do that. You're not obligated to do that. It's small, it's little pieces, it's insignificant. You either come to eat those things, no one's going to come to eat those things. They're dirty, they're dirty, okay? And to worry about your one-year-old who may come to eat it, that's not an obligation, okay? All right, so you know what? I wouldn't say that you shouldn't check your trucks, right? Maybe some kid stuck something in the truck, right? That's a big possibility. Not saying that don't check. No one's saying don't empty out your toy box, because make sure that because could be something's there, right? There, if you're looking for something, you know, you should be looking for something significant, okay? But you know, we used to wash all our toys, right? One of the Sunday projects before Pesach was you shluck all the big toys out, and everybody, you know, washes it down. You know, dirt and grime is not chametz. Okay, and so the question is, you know, but again, this was how we used to go ahead and do it. Okay, you know, we don't do that anymore. But at the same time, right, the books that aren't checked for chametz and the toys that aren't checked for chametz. I don't mean not checked; not that they're totally ignored. But we're not going through each one checking for crumbs, right? So we clean out the drawers, you know, to make sure there's nothing in them. But if you haven't checked something really thoroughly, you don't bring it to the table. Don't bring it to the table. Because of the fact that there is something to be concerned about. There is something that's more of a place to be concerned. And therefore, many Paiskim say, if these things you're not going to check, okay, don't bring them to the table. Benchers, right? Benchers get so full of crumbs, right, that it's impossible to do anything with them. And therefore, the common custom is when it comes to benchers, you just put them away. Which is why it's so hard to, you know, to help with people benching. You have to find all your haggadahs, you know, wherever haggadahs possibly could have to go ahead and give you guests. Because we don't, or I think nowadays they have Pesach benchers, you know. That's the new thing that they sell, Pesach benchers. But again, there's a reason for it. Now, okay, so another thing is pockets. Pockets. Now, if you look in halacha, that they talk about pockets, right? You got to clean your pockets. Now, that was because of the fact that there was considerable consideration that people stuck food in their pockets. Do we do that nowadays? Maybe yeah, maybe not. If you should bechi you do, if you should bechi you don't. You know, it depends what it is. You know, it depends what your situation is. But at the end of the day, again, what are you looking for in your pocket? What are you looking for? What are you concerned about in your pocket? You're concerned about something significant, right? Lint is not chametz, right? If there's some kind of little pieces, little crumbs in there again, it's going to stick your hand, it's going to come out. That doesn't typically happen. You want to check your pockets, you want to, but you want to check them for the real stuff. You want to check them for something significant. And it's also interesting we brought down that it's like a custom to check your pockets on the night of Bedikas chametz. It's brought down. You know, there too, you know, you need to use some common sense and decide if you want to wait, you know, for the night of Bedikas Chametz, right, to have to go through all the pockets. You know, you really want to, you know, you need to make the right decision for that. There's no chiyuv to do it that night. For some reason, it's brought down a minig to do it then. It's brought down to do it then. Okay, you know, there could be such a minig. But you still need to know and decide, you know, what's going to make the most sense for what you need to do. Now,
you know, start something here. I at least know that when I was working in the plantation, there a pocket was quite literally something that you hook onto your belt. It was not sewn into your clothes.
Okay.
So they would have had one or two.
Okay.
So when you're talking about cleaning pockets, they were talking about one or two per person.
Okay. Look, you know, years back, people didn't. You know, the houses that we live in are mansions compared to what you know, people used to live in.
And they had servants.
No, but wasn't it like years ago, like the floors were all schmutz?
The floors were like schmutz.
They like they're coming out there. There's like turn over the dirt on their floors, and then
that was enough. You mean
that was their cleaning for Pesach?
It could be. Look, if you look in the Gemara and everything like that, right? The night before Pesach, The night of Erev Pesach, that's Bedikas Chametz. There's no other talking about cleaning and all that stuff. It's not there. But as life, you know, as life evolved for the Jewish people, you know, different situations came up, which therefore meant that, you know, there was going to be more work involved. Now again, now in discussing the fact that wherever you're checking has a lot to do with whether, you know, it's accessible to you for eating or not. So again, as we mentioned, you're not going to be home for Pesach, right? Then again, theoretically, you could just go ahead and sell. How about a desk at your, let's say you have an office, you have a desk, you're at work. You have a desk at work, okay? Now, is it your desk? No, it's not my desk. That doesn't help, though, that if my chametz is sitting there, anybody's chametz is sitting there, right? So if you're going to be there during Pesach, you got to clean it up. If you're not going to be there Pesach, then theoretically you could sell whatever's in there and that's it. Close it up, sell it, and you're not going to be there. But again, it all revolves a lot around whether you're going to have access to that or not. Are you going to be there or not? If you're going to be there by your desk on during Pesach, you got to make sure that it's clean. If you don't have to, then theoretically, then halachically, sell what's there, and you're done. Okay. Now, another thing, which again, may not be so common, is the fact that because the sages were so concerned, Chachamim were so concerned about us coming to eat chametz, that they forbade us to handle chametz. So imagine, you know, it's Pesach, and some kid next door, right, from a Goyish family, didn't like his lunch that day, doesn't want his mother to see that he didn't eat his lunch. So before he walks into the house, he takes a sandwich and throws it over the fence into your backyard. Not your chametz. Right? It's not my chametz. I don't want it. I certainly don't want it. But at the end of the day, there's chametz on my property. I can't just leave it there. So what do you want to do? Pick it up, throw it back over, right? You can't do it with your hand. You can't handle chametz directly. You can indirectly handle it, but not directly. You'd have to, like, you know, take a shovel or something and get rid of it. If it happens on Yontif or Shabbos, it's muktzah. You wouldn't even be able to do that. You'd have to just cover it. You could theoretically kick it away, but you're on Yom Tov or Shabbos, you would cover it over. But you can't handle chametz. So let's say, you know, I haven't seen this in a long time, but, you know, they used to, like, send cereal samples in the mail. You know, they'd find these little boxes of cereal coming in the mail. Okay. Well, what happens if it shows up on Pesach? What do you do then? Now, again, you don't want to be kind of, you don't want to acquire it, so that's not the issue. But you can't have it there. You can't leave it there. So, again, you can't just pick it up with your hand and move it. Okay, maybe the box isn't direct. Okay, I don't know. But basically, you can't handle it regularly. You have to handle it indirectly because Chazal were afraid that if we handle chametz directly, that we could chas v'shalom come to possibly eat it. Okay, now, so again, these are general guidelines about removing chametz. You know, different situations come up, you know, and people should ask shilas if they're not sure. But again, I think it's important to have a basic general guideline of what it is that we're obligated to do, what we're not obligated to do, what's customary to do. We respect what's customary to do. We try what's customary to do. But again, we have to understand what everything is exactly to figure out what makes sense, what's going to be possible for us to do, to be able to do the mitzvah and to enjoy Pesach properly. Yeah.
If let's say you get that cereal in the mail on Pesach, do you have to burn it?
You can't burn it on Pesach. Yeah, but you didn't. Right. So I'm not sure because it's not yours. You didn't want to be kind of it.
Even if it has, let's say, your name was mailed to you.
You don't want it. Do you want that? You want that box of cereal on Pesach? You don't want it. Just because they mailed it to me and dropped it off and dropped
it off. Makes it not yours?
Yeah, because I don't want to be kind of it. How does it become mine? They drop it off at my property.
It's your property.
Right, but that means my property is acquired. And how does coming to my property make it mine? Because there's a chatzer. The halacha is a chatzer acquires. But if I don't want something, if I don't want to acquire something, nothing's going to acquire it against my will. So it's very clear that you don't want the chatzer, your property, to acquire. It's not going to acquire for you. But you can't just leave it there. Now, again, I'm not sure about how far you have to go with burning it. I'm not sure. But in the very least, you know, again, you don't want to acquire it, but you can't just leave it there. Before I go on to the next thing again, because we're kind of you know, for now we're finished with the removing chametz. So one last chassidus shemaisa, and that is that again, Rabbi Twersky tells a story of a yid who owned a brewery, and you know, beer's chametz, and he always made sure before Pesach to go ahead and they always good to make sure to go ahead and sell it. Find a local guy and he would sell it. So one year, one of the guys in town who knew the practices of the yidden decided to get it this yid, and he convinced every guy in town, do not buy his brewery. He went to get him and he said, don't buy it. He knew, you know, if he can't buy it, that, you know, he can't keep it. And came before Pesach, he tried to sell his chametz where he usually did, and no buyers. What's he going to do? So what did he do? He had to be mevatel it. Had to be mafker it. He had to say, it's not mine. Now, to really go in and show it's not his, he can't just, like, you know, say, it's not mine. God, it's not mine. He basically had to open his doors to the brewery. It's hefker, it's ownerless. You want to declare and show that it's, you want to show that you mean it, that it's really hefkerless? You want your declaration of hefker and bittel to really mean something? In this kind of situation, he'd have to open the doors and just basically let anybody come in and take it. And as he left to go to his wife's family for Pesach, he knew that, okay, what's he going to do? He's going to suffer a huge loss because nobody wanted to buy it. He had to basically declare everything ownerless, leave it open. Of course, they're all going to come and clear him out. Okay, but that's what he had to do. All right, comes home after Pesach, and the local guy say to him, "Wait a minute, you weren't serious about me, Mafkir, about giving up ownership. You had all those dogs, ferocious dogs, at the opening of the brewery, standing there guarding it." I said, "What are you talking about? I don't have any dogs." And he corroborated the story with everybody in town. There, all these ferocious dogs were there in front of his brewery. Okay, so he went to the local rabbi and he said, what do I do now? Can I take it back? Can I take back the beer or not? And he said, look, you, from your part, you went ahead and you declared it ownerless. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam did a miracle for you to protect you, and he sent the dogs. But at the end of the day, you did your part. You rendered it hefker. It was ownerless. What happened afterwards? The Rebbeinu Shel Olam helped you be able to do what you had to do so you could and you can take your beer back. Which is the story, the idea of the story is that, again, we do our part. When we do our part sincerely, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam takes care of the rest. And then he brings from the Netziv of Elazhin, that the Netziv said that, you know, Pesach has so many mitzvahs, and there's so many mitzvahs to be besimcha about. But if you want to be miserable and anxious, it's very easy. Did I clean out the chametz properly? Were the matzahs baked properly? Was the mara checked for bugs properly? You know, you could worry about everything and be anxious about everything on Pesach. But on Pesach, we have a mitzvah of simcha. We have a mitzvah to rejoice. If we have a mitzvah to rejoice, then that means that we have to do our part. We do the best that we can, and the rest we put in the Rebbeinu Shlomo's hands to make sure that it's completed and everything at the end is done right. Because it's all about what we try to do and sincerely try to do. And beyond that, like everything else, but even for a mitzvah like this, even when it comes to a mitzvah, we do the best that we can, and the rest of it we put in the hands of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Now, there is also a prohibition not only to possess chametz, but to have benefit from chametz. Now that I have derived benefit from chametz. And this can manifest itself in a couple of interesting ways. Number one, there is a halacha. I'm not sure how to explain this halacha. I'm not really fully understood it. But you can't feed a stray animal chametz. I mean, let's say you made your chametz hefker, you're a mevatel it, it's nothing, right? It's not yours. Now you want to take and feed it to a stray dog. Can't do it. Can't do it. You cannot feed a stray animal. For some reason or other, that's called you're having benefit. Now, another example. You know, your fish food, right? If it's chametz, can't feed it to your fish, okay? And you can't, even if you're not going to be there, right, and put it under one of these, you know, automatic things where the food comes out on its own, dispenses the food on its own, and the fish eat it. It's if you own the chametz, you're owning chametz, right? Theoretically, if you sell the chametz, it's not your chametz. But if at the end of the day, the fish is still eating the chametz because the guy says, yeah, you can let him eat the fish food, you're benefiting from chametz. So to go ahead and necessarily, you know, go ahead and sell the fish food to the guy, and then the guy comes and he feeds the fish that fish food to the fish, is not going to help you because you're still benefiting from chametz. You'd have to go ahead and not just sell the fish food to the guy, you have to sell the fish to the guy. And the truth is that if you look in the text of the sale of chametz document, animals are mentioned. Animals are actually mentioned. You know, a lot of times you don't need that because at the end of the day, you're home with your animal, right? And it's not going to help you just selling the, you know, you get it to, even to go ahead and it's the guy's animal, it's in my possession, but I'm feeding the animal, it's not going to work. So therefore, typically, you know, you got to try to find, and we put out a list of kosher Pesach fish foods, you know. There is such a thing, and but I'm just giving you an example of what it means not to have benefit from chametz. It goes so far as that even if you're not owning the chametz, but if at the end of the day you're benefiting from it, your animal is eating it, so you're benefiting from it, you're not allowed to have benefit from chametz. And in that kind of situation, you even have to go ahead and make sure to sell the animal along with the chametz itself. Okay, do we have any? Yeah.
So if people in your family like to throw snack crumbs or stale bread into the yard for squirrels and birds to eat from, so that stuff can't be in the yard on Pesach. Or can it?
Now, the thing is like this.
Also, sometimes, depending on the size of what they throw, like it lasts a little bit longer.
Does it really?
It depends. Sometimes they hide it. Sometimes the animals take it and hide it in my neighbor's house, which I recently found out. Which is a separate problem.
You know, again, you know, if I don't know, I one time heard, are you mechayiv to check your backyard for chametz on the night of bdikas chametz, walk around with a flashlight in your backyard? I don't know of too many people who do that. The assumption is if the food was left there, right, some animal's going to pick it up. If you know that's not happening, then yeah, you should be doing something about it.
Well, they're throwing it out, it's like hefter. The problem is on her possession.
Right, it's on her property.
I mean,
that's the problem.
The squirrels take it and then bring it back also.
Yeah, they take it from her house.
Because they live in the trees above.
Again, if, you know, maybe if you all of a sudden walked in and saw it there, you know, on Pesach, should you do something about it? Okay, but, you know, again, I don't know how far you have to go, you know, worrying about the squirrel who, you know, picked up a piece of bread from somewhere and brought it into your backyard and dropped it there. I don't know. I don't mean you have to go that far.
Make sure that there's time.
I don't always have control over what gets.
No, but again, at the same time, again, I think the typical assumption is that some animal is going to get it,
right?
Going to eat it or take it away. That's the typical assumption. These things don't, unless you know it does, and you know maybe you got to deal with it then. But typically, it's not something we have to be concerned about. Okay. Thank you all for coming. Have a good evening.